I'm Heather.
And I'm Corey.
And this is Movie Shelf, where we talk about movies, movie trivia, and just about anything related to pop culture. We're glad you're here. In today's episode, we're talking about the epic, the monumental, the highly anticipated Endgame.
Avengers Endgame.
We will also talk about some of our picks of the week, movies that are coming out that we're interested in, and of course, we'll enjoy a side of bacon.
Bacon.
Now, before we commence on discussing, again, this monumental film, a three-hour film, as you just pointed out earlier.
A three-hour film. No, sorry.
We want to basically give a spoiler warning, because usually when we engage in our discussions, we try to avoid spoilers.
Yeah, we try to keep them spoiler-free.
But because the directors and everybody involved in Endgame, they did such an amazing job of keeping the plot and everything under wraps that even to really discuss anything will be revealing some spoilers. But we will try to refrain from any
grand spoilers.
We will try to refrain from those.
So we will leak some of the movie concepts, but yeah, all the big grandiose moments that fans are going to flip-flop over, we're not going to spoil those for the fans.
Yeah. We are now, we've done Infinity War, poof, half of the universe is dust.
Yes.
And
half of the people on Earth are dust.
We pretty much, you know, we're left with our core Avengers and other heroes too, but definitely
a few others, but it almost dwindles down to the core.
Right. And of course they're
angry. And when we say core, we mean the ones that were in the original first Avengers movie.
Right. So we have Black Widow, we have Iron Man, we have Thor, we have
Captain America,
we have Hulk.
Yes.
And one more.
Hawkeye.
Oh, I do like Hawkeye. I should have.
Yeah, how do you forget
I should
Jimmy
have start
Renner?
With Hawkeye.
You got like such a Jimmy Renner fetish almost. How could you forget Hawkeye?
Yes, I do like Jeremy Renner. All right, so those are the core Avengers. They're the ones that we've been seeing consistently on the movie posters. I know movie posters have changed, you know, as other characters were revealed. But anyway, those are the core. And they're angry, they're upset.
They're sad. Oh yeah, if anything, they're just emotionally beaten down. I mean, they're depressed.
Yes.
Very depressed. Some more than others.
Yeah.
In this movie.
So.
AKA Thor.
Yeah. So this movie in particular, Endgame, it's kind of this culmination of this whole 11-year masterful.
Yeah, 11-year, 22 film.
Masterful cinematic project. And in the movie, there is, you know, we do advance in time. You got a glimpse of that, I think, in the previews by watching, you know, Black Widow's hair evolve.
Yeah, it's very short and blonde in some scenes. Other scenes is long and red again with the end blonde high. So, yeah, even from the previews, you do know that there are some passages of time involved in this movie.
And our heroes, like we said, they're sad, they're depressed, they're beaten down, and they're trying to live in this new life.
Yeah, they're trying to move on.
Yeah.
And they've almost accepted that, hey, you know, what's happened's happened. Nothing we can do about it, pretty much. We're just going to try and make do.
Yeah. Now, I mean, some do cling to hope, and they're still looking for an answer. Some have moved on to a more secluded life, kind of just, you know, starting very fresh almost.
Starting over.
Some are seeking revenge, and some play video games. Because what do you do?
To escape.
When
reality.
You need to escape, yeah.
Yes.
Play video games. So the story really, I think, starts to more evolve when you see Ant-Man arrive, which, again, you see him in the previews arriving, knocking on the door. So Scott Lang, which is played by Paul Rudd, you know, returns, and he starts presenting a theory that would use the quantum realm to apply some time traveling elements as a way to perhaps save or fix the current situation.
Yeah, and this doesn't happen until after the we'll go in and say there's a 5-year time jump.
Yes,
and after the 5-year time jump, everybody's just pretty much still in that depressed, trying to move along with a life after all this time. So not much really changes.
Yeah. So Ant-Man arrives 5 years later.
Yes. By an accident, you know, at the you may remember in the ending credits of Ant-Man and the Wasp, he gets stuck in the quantum realm because mm-hmm. the people that are supposed to pull him out get dusted from the snap.
Right.
And then through a freak accident, he gets pulled out of the quantum realm finally 5 years later, which for him was only 5 hours because time works differently in the micro quantum realm.
So the Avengers then have to again assemble and come together to try to figure out this plan and see how it'll work to fix the situation.
And they have a theory, and they tested this theory, but it wasn't until Tony Stark was able to fix the final touches on it to actually get it to work.
Yeah.
So, you know, at first he was like, hey, I have nothing to do with this. You guys are on your own. I'm happy. I've moved on. So forth, so forth. But then he sees that little picture of him and Peter Parker, and I think that's what gives him a change of heart. He's like, you know, I pulled him into this. He feels partially responsible that, right, that he's no longer around. And I think he is, I guess he kind of, in his mind, I owe it to him to try and make this work.
Yeah. So the movie, you know, kind of carries on with trying to fulfill that mission, that plan of, you know, using time as a way to fix everything. But it's just a lot of fun because it's filled with lots of fan moments as they are carrying it out.
And, you know, the movie starts out kind of depressing through almost the whole movie. And it isn't until they start acting on this plan that then you start getting some lighter hearted moments finally creeping in and right. causing some, you know, some smirks, some grins here and there, some fan filled moments, you know, of greatness.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which we won't spoil.
And, you know, and part of it is, you know, it starts out with them maybe kind of, you know, in that moment of despair, you know, disassembling. And then when they assemble, that, you know, that camaraderie really comes back. And the way that they work together as a team comes back. You know, it's like when we were discussing the first Avengers film. And that moment where everything, like, the light switches on and they just start working as a team.
Everybody clicks, yes.
Yeah, and it's just so great and so fun to watch.
Wonderful eye candy. And even though we're not going to reveal too much spoilers what happens during the time zone, we will say that pretty much all the time jumps happens in the previous movies that have already come out.
Right.
For the most part, yeah. I mean, some may take place right after another particular movie ends seamlessly, but yeah. You definitely are very familiar with the time era in the place of where these other jumps are happening.
Right. The directors and the writers did an amazingly clever job on kind of interconnecting all those plots together.
Oh, yes. And it just makes you wonder, did they like throw this together at the last moment, or were they planning this all along, starting from, like, you know, 8 years ago, you know?
Yeah, you know, did they always have the end game in mind on how it would really play out? Because it does play out so great.
I mean, all the pieces fit together so well.
Things that there's just a million things that we probably liked about this film. I know I walked out with that feeling like, I'm good. You know, sometimes you walk out of a film and you might have that feeling of, it would have been better if they did this, or maybe if they had done that, or I would have felt better if I'd seen more of this character or something. And I don't have that with this film, which is fantastic. Plus, I loved the way we got to see it. So we saw it pretty much opening night. It opened on Friday, but, you know, we saw it Thursday, because Thursday is really the new Friday, apparently. So we saw it as one of the first main audiences to get to see it. The theater was filled.
Oh, it was packed.
It was sold out.
So packed.
And
as I'm sure every theater was that night showing the movie.
And the one really cool thing about this particular theater, it's a Harkins theater. And we like going to it because, well, first off, we went to this one particularly because we didn't. You know, the day that, you know, Cinemark, you know, announced the tickets being sold, it's like the day the internet crashed, you know, essentially, like, nobody could access the website.
We tried to get seats to a theater that had assigned seating.
Yeah, and first off, I couldn't even access the site, and then finally,
couldn't even get in.
There was, like, maybe four seats, but we'd have to look straight up at the screen. It's like, no, I want a better experience if we're going to go see it.
We'd done that with one of the, what movie was it when we were in the front row?
Well, Planet of the Apes, way
back. But not the good one, the bad one. We were in the front row looking straight up like, this is just an awful experience.
Yeah. So, Anyway, so for this one, we particularly chose the Harkins Theater because for us in this area, it still is open seating.
Yeah, we could,
so
we're like, we'll could just always show up like an hour early and try to get a good seat.
And which we did. We arrived about an hour early, totally expecting to be in line.
And for a split second, we're like, no way we're the first ones in line. And they're like, oh no, we've already let the line in. And they're like, oh no.
Yeah. But fortunately, where I like to sit was still open, or at least seats were still available in that row. So we got our seats and we were good to go. Well, so we're an hour early and the theater's almost like probably half full. I mean, it's just, and then by the time the movie, of course, started, it was full. The concession area was packed. It was super full. And the really cool thing about with this particular theater, especially for these opening night movies, is right before the movie starts, the manager always comes out to greet the crowd, rally us up. So we're cheering and we're woohooing and applauding.
I always find that a lot of fun.
And then they close the curtains and then they open. Actually, they didn't do the curtain thing, did they? I'm just inventing. Or did they? I can't remember if they do the curtain thing or not anymore.
Oh, I think they always did.
Okay. They close the curtains. They open the curtains. It's very dramatic and fun. And so anyway, so the movie goes. And of course, again, there's moments that, you know, we're all applauding and, you know, really enjoying things where everyone's cheering. You know, of course, you know, if we happen to see a character come back or something of that sort. And, you know, and then, of course, there's somber moments and, you know, everything's
some heartbreaking quiet moments, yes.
Yeah. So
not to say who, but there are some characters that do not make it at the end of the movie.
So one thing, it's really fun to be in that type of environment for this type of movie, just to have all that camaraderie around you. And, you know, when people get really excited to see whoever they want to see or to see whatever they want to see. And, you know, it's just a lot of fun to have that feedback. So I'm glad that we got to see it. Like I said, that kind of opening night experience. I thought our theater did a really great job. When I was getting the concession stuff for that movie, and the concession people were just working super hard because we were packed. And like, I don't think we've ever seen the concession lines that long.
Yeah. They're like almost backing up to the ticket guy.
So they're all just hustling and trying, you know, their hardest to get us into the movie as fast as possible.
And you know, this thought just now crossed my mind, but when we like to do our bacon game, this all of a sudden becomes one heck of a linking movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you will not believe.
So, also, this movie has your, I don't say it's not your, but has the final live, live action Stan Lee cameo.
Yes.
Yeah. So, it was pretty quick, but he's driving a car. And saying peace, man.
Yeah, it's definitely in the past, like you're thinking like in the 60s or something, you know, make love, not war, you know, kind of giving it to the military guards at the military base.
So it's cute.
Which, personally, I would have wished that they would have done one more for the next Marvel movie, being a Spider-Man movie, because, you know, Spider-Man was like one of his babies, you know, that he's is most famously connected with. Now, I wish they would have just done one more for that next movie, but, you know, but this is a very grandiose Marvel movie, and, you know, which he has a personal hand in creating so many other characters, so I can understand why they would have maybe wanted to come to a stop at this one when it comes to those.
Each dust-free character, meaning
the ones that survived the snap, as is being known to be called.
I think that they each got really a good moment to shine. You know, the way that this movie plays out to some degree is they kind of get paired off and to work and carry out this mission. And it's, for some of them, it's an interesting pairing.
It is, because, you know, they for some of them, they haven't met each other before.
Right.
You know, for like
lots of trust, you know, instantly.
I don't think this would be a spoiler, but Nebula and War Machine pairing up for one of these missions. Mm-hmm. It's like, whoa, you know, they're definitely an odd pairing.
I also thought that was a particular, it was an interesting pairing. Also, the fact that, because of course, War Machine, Rhodey, he has to have the leg. I don't know.
He kind of has a prosthetic aid to his messed up legs.
Yeah, and of course, Nebula also has lots of enhancements.
Well, she's almost nothing but prosthetics.
Yeah, so it was interesting for them particular to be paired up, and you know, because I think they do have a moment where one of them kind of comments about it.
Yeah, she kind of says, I wasn't always like this, and he kind of says, yeah, I wasn't always like this either, yeah. Referring to his legs.
Yeah.
That had to be Iron Man to be functional.
So it was, I think there was some interesting pairing that was very smart and clever, but I think also through all these kind of pairings and these kind of breakout little missions, it gave each of them that, again, that moment to either to shine or to resolve some issues, you know, just different things like that. So I really enjoyed that. You do get to kind of go back into some of those scenes of the older movies.
And, yes.
You know, and just you get to just get reminded of how much you really adore these characters and these personalities and these stories. It's almost like, you know, like if you picture yourself like as a, you know, a kiddo, and maybe not a kiddo, you know, but you've got your superhero blanket and, you know, all your superhero stuff in your room. It's just almost like being surrounded by all these things that you like as you're watching this film.
It's definitely kind of a comfort movie, I guess you could say, in that sense.
Yeah. And, you know, I adore all types of movies, you know, from the serious and dramatic to the sarcastic and the satirical to the romantic, you know, all types. But I think this one is really just kind of an epitome of all the reasons why you really love film. You know, you go watch a movie to be entertained, essentially, and to connect and things of that nature. So I really felt all that with this film, which is great.
I have come across some reviews of this movie, and there are some people that complain that this movie is too much fan service. That, you know,
fish bosh.
Well, yeah, but, you know, there are moments that unless you're a diehard fan of all these previous movies, you know, then obviously you're getting all the jokes, all the little tongue-in-cheek moments that they're playing off of. And if you're not a diehard fan of them and you know, haven't seen them a dozen times, you know, you're missing out on those. But I don't think that'll make the movie any less enjoyable for those other viewers. But I would say it is more enjoyable for the ones that are able to catch everything.
Right.
All the little under-the-cover jokes and so forth.
I would say, you know, and we talked about this a little bit before, and I compared it to, what if you were somebody that watched The Empire Strikes Back first? You skipped all the other Star Wars movies, and for whatever reason, you decided to watch this. It's almost like how you sometimes watch movies and you catch the end first, you know, like Shawshank Redemption and The Usual Suspects.
What? I don't do that.
So anyway, like, what if you're someone that you started with Empire Strikes Back? Yeah, you'd be missing a lot because you didn't work your way up to that point. But it's still a good film, and you're most likely still going to enjoy it. But yeah, you need to probably get more involved in the universe. So we have a list to help you out.
So, you know, in the 22 movies in the MCU, you and I have discussed, and we figured, you know, it is not by any means necessary to be familiar with all 22 of these movies.
Although it's good because they're great movies.
They are. But we do have a list of what do we have here? I believe it
was
is.
It eight?
No, just seven. Seven essential movies that you would need to have at least seen at some point before seeing Endgame.
Right. So if you want to be in the know at the Endgame party,
yes,
check out these films.
And maybe give them one last viewing before seeing Endgame if you haven't seen it already. Or unless you're one of those people who've already seen the movie dozens of times and you pretty got to memorize, don't need to see them again. So first, the first Avengers movie.
Okay.
And we're doing these in order of when they were released. So it's not an order of like favorite movies or anything. These are just in release order. Thor 2, The Dark World for the second one. Number 3, Captain America 2, The Winter Soldier. Number 4, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
Super fun movie on its own. If you haven't seen this movie, you're definitely missing out.
Especially if you enjoy 80s, or even earlier, I think, than 80s music.
And then number 5, Captain America 3, Civil War.
Apparently Captain America is your go-to guy.
Yes. Number 6, Doctor Strange.
Uh-huh.
Definitely need to see that one to be in all the know of what's happening. And then, last but not least, Thor 3 Ragnarok. Another super fun one all on its own.
Okay. Those are all excellent. I'm going to add one more to your list, though. Okay. So I am going to make it 8, because I feel like you should see Infinity War.
I pretty much did. But no, I did miss. There is a number 8 on here. We did miss it. Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Okay.
Now, and if you see that one, make sure you catch the scene after the credits.
Right.
Very pertinent to Endgame and Infinity War.
Okay. Well, I still say, rather than just assume that you've seen Infinity War, make sure you watch Infinity War 2. In fact, we watched Infinity War right before we saw
that afternoon. Yep.
Which was really nice because, A, Infinity War makes me mad because it's so sad and depressing. And so it's nice to have watched it and then be able to finish the story right after that.
Yeah. And, you know, together it almost makes like 1 5-hour movie.
Yeah.
It's just insane.
One thing that was great is the fact that, you know, Endgame is 3 hours.
Yes.
But it was fast. And it was, I mean, you were totally engaged.
You did not have the feel that you were sitting through a 3-hour long movie. I've had the similar experience with all 3 Lord of the Rings movies. I think each one in the theater was like 3 hours long. Right. But never did I feel like, oh man, this is taking forever. I mean, you're kept fully entertained through the whole time, and the story is progressing at a nice, good pace, and there are no, like, dull, like, oh, come on, let's, you know, get on with it moments.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it goes by pretty quick.
I know. There's, like, some, you know, just hour-and-a-half movies where you're like, is it over yet? Come on. But no, Endgame, you are absolutely, totally, it's captivating the entire time, so, which I thought was great. We never felt like we needed a rush out, to do anything. Yeah, we were able to just stay put in the theater the whole time.
Yep.
And plus, I think everyone like around us was, you know, there really wasn't anyone having to necessarily rush out. So that's good.
So, yeah. So in general, a movie that, you know, all Marvel fans are just going to adore and just hoop and holler over. As far as any dislikes in the movie, now this is getting a little nitpicky. I don't like the science of how the time travel method, not the actual method of the time travel, but the whole time paradox works, I guess, in this movie. You know, when they go back, they do stuff, they jump back forward, and, you know, change or done shit. You know, because I'm a fan of time traveling movies. The theory behind them always intrigues me, and I don't agree with the time traveling theories in this movie.
They do kind of bash the Back to the Future time travel theory, I think I'm definitely a fan of the Back to the Future time travel theory. So I was like, that one makes sense to me. But yeah, they definitely have a different way of explaining it. You've now seen the movie twice. I've only seen it the one time. And it'd be nice to see it again to hear how they're really explaining it and stuff.
Yeah. But regardless of how many times they explain it, I don't agree with it. But as far as this movie goes, that's, you know, time travel, you know, as far as I know, is impossible. So it's all theoretical anyways on how it would work. If you were to go back in time, do something, go back forward, you know, what types of changes, if there are any changes, would be, you know, that's all, you know, who knows, even if it was to become possible. So with the whole time jumping thing, one thing that I did like about the time jumping theories is that they all agree you cannot go in the past, do something to change the present. So in this little time heist, as they call it, they're not trying to change the past. They're just trying to correct it from the time point that they're in on. And right. I won't go into any details on how that's involved, but I did appreciate that aspect of their time traveling theories as far as that goes.
Right. And I really like the fact that was their goal. On another note, after you've seen the movie, if you want to hear from, you know, a definite superhero comic book fan, you know, talking about how much he loved it.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Kevin Smith did a spoiler-filled...
very spoiler-filled.
...take on the film. And as he put it, you know, it's basically him just talking about the film. He's not reviewing it because he basically just talks about movies he likes. So, and he has no room to want to review it or not review it. So he's so fun to watch, but he does have... He does have lots of language, so just be mindful of that. It's Kevin Smith, and we do love Kevin Smith, but yes, he's not for everyone. But he definitely has so much passion as he's talking about the film. I mean, he tears up multiple times.
He starts crying.
I thought it was actually really cool how he talked about how he went to go see it, because he got to go see it at the actual premiere, like with all the actors.
Yeah, and with the stars.
I think Chris Hemsworth's guest in a sense, or got in because of him. He was able to take a guest, and he specifically took his daughter.
Instead of one of his best buddies, you know, he grew up with.
And that's because he watched Iron Man, so the movie that kind of kicked everything off, he watched that one with his daughter in the theater, so he wanted to
end it with her. Yeah, they've been together in this through the whole time.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, that's sweet. All right, Corey, I know we already knew this answer to this question.
Even before the movie came out.
But what's the verdict? Does it make the movie shelf?
It is so on the shelf.
It is.
It's going to be on our physical disc shelf. It's going to be my digital media shelf. It's going to be on just about every shelf I can put it on.
This one is, you know, it is just so much fun. It is just absolute fun. And it plays on all the emotions. And it has its own story. But yeah, it takes you back to re-experience all the moments and memories of the past, you know, from the past 11 years when they kicked everything off with Iron Man. Well, basically. And it was, you know, it was just well done. All the actors did a great job. The directors did a great job. The producers did a great job. All of them that's part of the MCU just did a great job. So, yeah.
Almost a flawless movie, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, and it's definitely, of course, it's on my movie shelf as well. And I will deem it a cinematic treasure.
Ooh, treasure.
And now it's time for our picks of the week. So we thought that, you know, we've of course talked already about all the great Marvel movies. We did that when we did our Captain Marvel episode. And, you know, of course, this movie's so great. And we even gave you our cheat sheet for preparing for Endgame. So rather than talk about superhero movies, we decided that we would talk about movies that the core Avenger group did before they started in the MCU. So just kind of movies that we felt either they stand out to us for whatever reason or, you know, kind of just put on the radar for us, again, before they kind of entered the MCU. So the first one, way back when, Corey, when you learned that Robert Downey Jr. was going to be Iron Man.
Yes, before the first MCU movie.
Yeah. You, I think, were a little hesitant because you didn't really know a lot about Robert Downey Jr. You really hadn't seen a lot of his movies.
Yeah, I wasn't too familiar with the guy.
And I, of course, was like, oh my goodness, Robert Downey Jr. is fantastic. And, you know, not only that, there's that, you know, paralleling, you know, of how Tony Stark has his own flaws, like with addictions of sorts, and Robert Downey Jr., of course, in real life has had his own flaws of addictions.
In the Iron Man comic books, it's always been, I guess, made known that his main nemesis is his alcoholism, more than any other character.
So he's a phenomenal actor and has so many great accolades and so many great options. You know, just check out his IMDb page and take a look at any of those options. However, way back when we were talking and I was kind of telling you about Robert Downey Jr., I told you that, well, you know, and this may not be like the best movie in the world by any means,
but there's one particular movie that definitely shows his acting range.
Right. So I told you about the movie Heart and Soul. And what this movie is that you have there's like a bus crash back in like 1959 or something like that. And there's maybe like four or five people that were on the bus and they died due to the bus crash. And the moment they died, a baby was born. That baby was in the movie, Robert Downey Jr.'s character. And these people became ghosts or kind of like guardians for the baby. And, you know, the kiddo grows up and he kind of just thinks he has imaginary friends that are very real to him, but no one else can see. But they're always looking out for him and kind of helping him and things like that.
But I remember that something happens and they all agree, okay, we got to stop appearing to him like we have been.
So they let him just live his life.
And they're still hanging around, but they just constantly chose to remain invisible the whole time.
Right.
Until something else happens and then they decide, all right, we need to start intervening.
Yeah, well, they learned that they needed to actually use him to finish some things so that they could pass on in their, you know, in the afterlife. And so the way they use him is they have to go into his body. So here's the thing. You have these like four or five different characters that are very different personalities. You have Kira Sedgwick, Alfra Woodard, I think, or something, Tom Sizemore's in there, and there's another one, I just can't remember who he was, but they're all different types of personalities. And of course, the moment they basically possess Robert Downey Jr., he has to become their personality and talk and act like them.
He does the impersonation like you will not believe between these other actors.
That's what we were talking about, that, you know, watch it. It's just, it's fun to see kind of him showing some of that range as far as, and again, this is before MCU started. This movie is way back in the 90s, so it's before a lot of it, even some of his other great films that he's done. But it's just, it's a treat just to watch him do all these different personalities. All right, so next on our list, Mr. Captain America, Chris Evans.
Yes.
So the only movie I could really think of, I know he did some teeny bopper-ish kind of movies.
Oh, yeah.
But the movie that stood out for me, and I think it's the one that stood out for you,
is... Yeah, we're both thinking of the same one.
Yeah, it's called Cellular.
Yes.
So I don't know if this one was really on a lot of people's radars. I know we saw it, like, on TV way back.
But it was definitely a surprise, because it was like, wow, this is intense.
Yeah.
And it was not on our radar before we saw it, and so it was like, you know, it was definitely a surprise to see it.
So the premise of this one is Kim Basinger is kidnapped, I think, or something of that sort.
Oh, yeah, she's definitely kidnapped.
While she's, you know, captured, she somehow is able to get a phone, like an old phone.
Well, there's a phone in the room that they imprisoned her in, but they took the phone and they just bashed it on the floor. But she's able to take some of these wires. And,
she's a science teacher, so she knows her stuff.
Which, you know, people may not realize that on the old rotary phones, mm-hmm. you know, when you hang up the handset, it actually pushes that little button down. Mm-hmm. If you tap the value numbers of the phone number on that button, you can actually make a phone call that way if you have to.
Yeah, so that's what she ends up.
Yeah, so she starts
doing.
You know, she's trying to duplicate what you know is known. I think this was made popular in the movie. Is it Hackers? Yeah, I think the movie Hackers. I might have to double check that. But yeah, so, you know, you touch the wires together, you make the connection, and then you quickly separate and touch the wires again in a sequence, and then you're pulsing, you know, in the old pulse phones, dialing the number.
Mm-hmm.
And she tries to do so, but doesn't dial the right number, evidently. He gets hold of a complete stranger.
Yeah, who's on a cell phone.
Yes.
And the complete stranger is Chris Evans. And just like being Captain America, he's good-hearted and wants to be able to help this woman who's very frantic on the other end of the phone and goes through all sorts of weird, you know, because he's trying to find her and she has no clue where she is.
Yeah.
And all they have is this connection to the phone and, you know, it's just, yeah. So it's really good and, you know, definitely interesting watching him try to find her and it's very good. All right. Next, we have Black Widow, Scarlett Johansson.
Yes.
I struggled with this one because I feel like most of the movies that I think about for her are post-MCU or like after she entered the
MCU. Iron Man 2.
Yeah. Now, like, I know we had seen like Lost in Translation, but I didn't really like Lost in Translation.
No, me neither.
And so we're a little divided on our movie for her, I think. So I'll go with the one that I was thinking about is He's Just Not That Into You. And I picked it mainly because I like the movie overall. It's kind of an ensemble type of romantic comedy, I guess. I don't know if it's really comedy or dramedy, but... And she's actually not a likable character because her character's having an affair with Bradley Cooper. So kind of fun. They eventually enter the MCU together. But so it's, like I said, not a very likable character, but I thought it was a fun movie. So what was your pick for Scarlett Johansson?
Okay, well, now, as far as movie, I was not a huge fan of the movie. It was definitely interesting because considering what my hobby is, and I don't think I've revealed this to our listeners yet, but I have a hobby of being a prestidigitator.
Corey likes to do magic tricks. But he's really good.
I don't claim to be very good, but a lot of people tell me that I'm pretty good. But, yeah, so the movie of The Prestige.
Mm-hmm.
And so she definitely has a interesting role because she's kind of... she's almost being a spy in that movie, kind of bouncing back for these two rivals in the movie.
Right.
So.
Because is she somebody's assistant?
Yeah, and you wonder, is she really spying for this person, or is she really flipping over to the other person? It kind of has you guessing for a while
So she's being Black Widow.
Almost.
Yeah, so in The Prestige, you've got Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale, and they're both
You got they're Michael partners, Caine. Michael like, Caine as well.
Yeah, but they're partners with the Magic Act, and then, of course, they become rivals.
Yes.
And they're both trying to figure out who, how
each other's secrets. Somebody comes up with this awesome trick, and they're trying to figure out each other's secrets on how they're doing these awesome tricks. And
yeah, Scarlett Johansson, I think, is the assistant of one of them.
One, and tries to become the love interest of the other, and...
So, as you mentioned, craziness. Michael Caine, it's also a Christopher Nolan film, right? So we got Christian Bale and Michael Caine.
Yes, yes. So,
all right. So next on our list, one of my favorite guys, Jeremy Renner.
Yes.
Or Hawkeye from the film. So the one that really stood out for me, which I know we had seen before.
I think we agreed on the same movie on this one.
Yeah, I think you finally came to my movie, which is Hurt Locker.
Yes. Interesting. Also stars. War Machine.
Yeah, which I forgot about Don Cheadle. I knew about Guy Pearce, because he's at the very beginning of the film.
Yeah. Another MCU pairing before the MCU happened.
So Hurt Locker is, and I always miss-say the acronym, IED?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so Hurt Locker...
Improvised Explosives Device.
Okay, yeah, so Hurt Locker has, you know, Jeremy Renner, he's basically... an IED diffuser.
Yeah, he's the bomb squad. The military bomb squad.
And they're off, you know, they're off in the Middle East somewhere, and it's very intense to watch them have to deal with these.
Because once somebody sees any sign of a booby trap, they're like, oh, got to get this guy over here. And he, like, carefully starts unveiling everything.
I can't even imagine being that person that has to do. I mean, that's just a lot of a lot of stress that's going on. Because of course they've just shoot up.
The one when he has to defuse one in the car, I'm like, he's like tearing up seats, trying to find a safe way to disarm it. It's like, oh, very intense. It's like, oh my gosh.
So he definitely did a great job. He shows, you know, basically a person that, I mean, he's very good at his job, and I think he finds it really hard to move on from that job.
Yeah.
Next, Thor. We have Chris Hemsworth. So the first movie that really came to mind was, and he doesn't really have a whole lot before Thor.
No.
But
no.
The first one that came to mind is Star Trek.
And that's almost the only thing that can come to mind.
There was another movie that I know we had seen, but we saw it after we would have seen Thor and stuff. So.
Okay.
But I know we saw Star Trek when it first came out. And he had an amazing scene. I mean, he's just in the opening scene.
It's a short scene, but, I mean, he in that short scene, he gives an awesome performance.
Yeah, I mean, that was just so great in the movie itself. And, you know, as soon as that scene was done, it's just like, oh, my goodness, what are they going to do now? Because that was just so great. I really liked him in it was the Star Trek reboot, I guess.
Yes, I love the tagline, "This is not your father's Star Trek."
And he plays... Tiberius Kirk, right?
Not 100% positive, but he plays Captain Kirk's dad, whether his name was Tiberius or not.
Oh, yeah, he's not Tiberius. His dad is Tiberius.
Well, Captain Kirk is James Tiberius Kirk.
I know, but when she's delivering James T. Kirk, she's like, why don't we name him after your dad? And he's like, Tiberius? No. How about we name him after your dad, Jim?
Yeah.
So...
Okay.
But I forgot what Chris Hemsworth's name was, which Kirk he was.
Oh, so Tiberius would have been his granddad.
Yeah.
Okay.
From the James side.
Yeah.
From the Chris Pine James Kirk, it was his, granddad. Anyway, final core Avenger, we have Mark Ruffalo.
Yes.
This is the third Hulk. But he is the most consistent Hulk.
Now, technically, Edward Norton was in the MCU Hulk movie.
Right.
So why they changed the actor when they did Avengers, I'm not sure. I would have been thrilled if they would have kept Edward Norton, because I really like him. I thought he did an awesome job in his Hulk movie. A whole lot better than the awful Eric Bana Hulk movie. Yeah. That was
but I do
terrible.
Like Eric Bana.
We do like him, but just not in that movie.
No, that movie had flaws.
A lot of them.
But yeah, and we really like Edward Norton, and there's plenty of movies to choose for him. However, Mark Ruffalo is the Hulk we were going with, and he did a great job as Hulk. I mean, I think he made a very good Bruce Banner, very believable, you know, kind of that awkward scientist struggling with his demons.
Oh, and that whole scene in Avengers when Black Widow goes to recruit him, that gets a little intense.
Yeah.
Very reluctant hero role for him.
But it is. So for Mark Ruffalo... I actually, kind of like with Scarlett Johansson, I struggled a little bit with trying to think of movies that I saw before the MCU started. And, like, I know I had seen 13 Going on 30, but I don't really remember
him.
And this is another one where we're a little torn, because the movie that I want to go with, I know you have not seen, but it's The Brothers Bloom. And so this is a movie he's with Adrian Brody and Rachel Weisz. And essentially, him and Adrian are the brothers, I guess, sort of, but they're con artists. And they're, Adrian is kind of basically tired of doing the con. And so he wants to quit. So Mark Ruffalo has kind of basically said, one more, last one, and then we're done. Or you're done, basically.
The big last, the last big score.
So they target Rachel Weisz's character, and she's this eccentric, wealthy woman, and I think they target someone that's a little bit more than they can handle. So it's I liked it. They're definitely very quirky and peculiar. But anyway, so that's my pick for Mark Ruffalo, is The Brothers Bloom, which actually I thought whoever made Now You See Me probably saw The Brothers Bloom and got inspired. Okay, so what is your Mark Ruffalo pick?
Okay, so before Avengers, I mean, it seemed like any role he's had in a movie is not a prominent role.
Well, so, I mean, not necessarily. I mean, like I said.
Or it's a very obscure movie. But one movie that I do recall him being in, that it was a movie that I kind of liked, was called The Wind Talkers, which is a Nicolas Cage war movie about when they were using the language of one of the Native American tribes, can't remember at the moment, possibly Navajo, to send communication signals by radio through the different teams, because it was the only thing they could come up with that the enemies could not decipher.
Those are our picks of the week, just to kind of give you a taste of what these actors were up to before they entered the MCU. Of course, they've done even, you know, other amazing things while in the MCU, but this is just the pre-MCU.
We try hard to pick movies that they were in before the MCU started.
Right. So,
even though they've been in plenty of awesome non-MCU movies after it started, that was our goal.
Now, Corey, let's talk about what some of the movies that are coming out that we were interested in.
Oh, boy. One moment.
I know one was a Jedi movie.
Okay, so we have X-Men Dark Phoenix.
Which I think we've talked about the Dark Phoenix before, but I think we saw a more involved preview this time.
Yes.
And actually a darker Dark Phoenix. And I was like, ooh, she's definitely embracing some of this darkness. Especially since, I guess, Jennifer Chastain, I don't think I had seen her character before in the previews. She kind of looks like she's the guide for the darkness, for the dark Phoenix.
Okay,
kind of leading her down toward the darker path. I don't know exactly who she is in the film, but it seemed like she's the one telling her about how to use her powers and don't trust other people kind of thing. What else?
Probably trying to unleash the darkness as in her for her own purposes, probably. But yeah, definitely looking forward to that as far as being the next X-Men universe movie. Live action Lion King.
Okay, yeah. So I think this was our first time to see the preview on the big screen, I think.
Yes.
Maybe, I'm not sure.
I don't think we've talked about that one before.
But the Lion King story itself is a great story.
Yes.
It doesn't look like they're necessarily wavering from the original storyline. So,
or, as I'll call it, the animal version of Hamlet.
Yeah. All right, what else?
Okay. Oh, boy. Star Wars,
Rise of Skywalker,
of Skywalker.
So this one looks like it'll be good. I know the last one annoyed me. What was the last one? The Last Jedi. That one annoyed me.
Why?
I feel like it just kind of ended in a weird way. And, you know, I felt like the Laura Dern character seemed off. She didn't quite seem like she fit into that universe. And even though she had a very key role. She was the other, like, commander person of that ship that was helping. I'm fine with the character. It was just the way she was portraying it just felt different to me than the rest of the characters. I also thought memories it was weird. Memories of
maybe a little hazy.
Well, again, with the whole, I don't like angry Luke. Or, you know, resistant Luke. I definitely, you know, I prefer, I was just angry with why Luke didn't want to do, like, didn't want to help
Rey.
Rey. Like, I was saying Daisy. I was like, that's her real name. Why he didn't want to help Rey. And he was so resistant.
Or did he in his own way?
I don't know. He was still, I was just like, I'm not digging this Luke. I think Luke should be a little bit more advisor-like.
I mean, it is a little bit, it is older, a little bit more pessimistic Luke, for sure. You know, being the hermit that he was.
So are you saying you adored Force Awakens? You had no issues or qualms with it?
I'm not saying that, but I didn't enjoy it overall. So.
Yeah. I really liked...
I was totally enthralled with the little Jedi trick that he pulls at the end.
I did like the... oh, what was his name? The Boyega guy. What's his character?
Poe?
I guess so. No? I thought that was that pilot. Yeah. The one that was a stormtrooper.
Okay, that one. Okay, yeah. His character name...
Finn, right?
Yes, I believe so. Yeah, because I think his serial was like FN something. Yeah. Oh, Finn, okay.
I liked Finn and the engineer girl. I liked what's brewing with them. And I liked how they were helping out at the end to kind of help with the big battle at the end.
Yeah.
But I liked The Force Awakens. I really liked Force Awakens. I'm very hopeful for this last one. I think it will be fun. I just didn't like the second one very well.
Yeah, well, it's
not me.
I've talked to other Star Wars fans, and yeah, it's not for everybody.
Which is fine. All right, what else?
Well, I'm not sure if we want to get into those, but Gemini Man?
Yeah, that looks weird. That one is Will Smith. Remember that one. And he has to... Will Smith, and they made a clone.
Yes.
As I was watching, I was like, isn't this the plot for Star Trek Nemesis?
I don't think it's a clone he's meeting. I think they send...
They said it was a clone, so...
Well, at first, but I think they lied to him, because I think there was some evidence in the trailer that there's a time travel involvement, and they're, like, sending the young one to take out the old one, or vice versa.
Okay.
So, we're not sure exactly what happens.
Somehow, he's fighting what looks like his younger self.
Yes.
It's like Will Smith battling Fresh Prince. But not comical at all. And I know there was another Godzilla, but...
Oh, but you probably told me not to drop.
Yeah, we've already talked about Godzilla. Okay, so we're good?
Yes.
Okay. Exciting summer ahead, or year ahead. And now, Corey, it is time for our side of bacon.
Bacon. I'm actually kind of liking this one. It's not the, you know, definitely not the shortest one I've done, but yeah, we'll just go. So remind us who we're linking, Heather.
We are linking Ron Perlman to Joaquin Phoenix.
Yes.
And I think, like, I came with a couple of twosies, but I didn't like the twosies, so I'm going with my threesie connection.
And I could only come up with the threesie, but after we did, I think we did a little bit more, we found some twosies that would work, but it was either using a movie that we haven't seen or one that we really did not want to use or something.
Yeah, like a movie that shouldn't exist kind of
thing. So we're both doing threesies this time.
Yeah. All right, so.
What's yours?
I have... Ron Perlman to Tom Hardy in Star Trek Nemesis.
Yes.
And then Tom Hardy to Reese Witherspoon in This Means War.
Which was an awesome movie, which I completely forgot about.
Oh, yeah. It's like a fun romantic, I guess it's like a romantic comedy, but like with an edge. It's Tom Hardy and Chris Pine.
It definitely gets edgy.
And they're fighting for the affection of Reese Witherspoon.
The same girl.
Yeah, basically. So... Tom Hardy to Reese Witherspoon in This Means War, and then Reese Witherspoon to Joaquin Phoenix in Walk the Line.
Walk the Line. And just as a side tidbit, Tom Hardy, I think it was definitely one of his first movies that put him on the map, playing a young...
Picard.
Captain Picard. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or a young Captain Picard clone, actually,
yeah.
Which he did an awesome job of.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of like, I like Jeremy Renner and I like Tom Hardy. Those are like my two go-to guys. And Patrick Wilson. Those are my guys. But it is kind of fun because you have, in like This Means War, you had Tom Hardy, who started with Star Trek. And then you have Chris Pine. Didn't necessarily start with Star Trek, but definitely has become the new James T. Kirk, at least for the moment. So you have two Star Trek guys battling for a Reese Witherspoon.
Interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah. All right, what's your...
He almost got the two captains, yeah. One's the clone of the
you
captain.
Got Picard and
battling the other captain.
Kirk. Which one do you want? All right, so is your three.
Okay, so I'm going to start with Joaquin Phoenix. Mm-hmm. Link him to Sigourney Weaver in...
The Village.
Yeah, in my channel, it's The Village. Mm-hmm. And then Sigourney Weaver to John Hurt in the ever-popular Alien.
Yes, he definitely had a stomach full on that one.
Yeah, he's one whose chest exploded with the alien. That freaked everybody out on set.
Yeah.
And then John Hurt to Ron Perlman in the Hellboy that we love.
Yes.
Hellboy movie.
Hellboy we love. And he plays Hellboy's dad.
Yeah, his adopted father.
So, all right. Those are all excellent movies, even though I don't like the twist of The Village, but they're all excellent movies.
I was just fine with the twist.
I know.
I had no problems with it.
I know. This is a repetitive conversation now.
But just as a side note, as a two-movie link that we did not want to use, but I will just go ahead and mention it, is that mine could have been cut a little bit shorter because Ron Perlman himself was in Alien Resurrection
with Sigourney
Weaver, which would have cut out John Hurt, but
yeah. We like John Hurt, so we'll put him in there. My bacon pick of the week will be Adrian Brody, and I'm pulling him from the Brothers Bloom movie.
Okay. I am going to go with Michael Caine, since we talked about The Prestige. Mm-hmm.
So we have Adrian Brody to Michael Caine. Thanks for listening to Movie Shelf.
Hey, would you click that subscribe button and like and share us with your friends? And if you're listening on your Apple device, leave us a comment and give us a rating. Let us know what you think.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. Also, be sure to check our show notes page. We'll definitely have lots of links to the trailers of the movies we talked about. And, of course, a reminder of our bacon.
And our required movie list.
Yes, the cheat sheet
Endgame.
For preparing for Endgame. And we'll catch you next time, you guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.